Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Could I just get the rest of this podcast to take away, please? Welcome to the Off Menu Podcast with me, Ed Gamble.
My name is James Acaster.
There he is.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you, mate.
Ed, who got coming in the restaurant today?
Oh, straight in, are we?
Well, I was wondering who we got coming.
I kind of think we're at the stage where we don't even need to explain that this is a dream restaurant.
We're going to ask tell them that we get the guests to pick their favourite ever starter, main course, dessert, side dish and drink. We don't need to tell them that.
No need. Today, also, we have an actual food professional chef.
Me?
Not you, James. Oh. You're there anyway. You're a given.
Okay.
We have the wonderful Marcus Samuelson in the restaurant.
Yeah.
He is head chef of Red Rooster in Harlem, and they have recently opened a Red Rooster in Shoreditch. It's very exciting.
He's got
such an interesting culinary history from where he was born in Ethiopia, brought up in Sweden, moved to America. But we're going to cover all of that in the podcast.
Hopefully.
He's a really interesting guy.
However, Ed, I know he's a professional chef, but I have no qualms kicking him out if he mentions the secret ingredient.
And what is the secret ingredient this week, James?
Chia seeds.
Chia seeds. They're weird.
They're weird, and they puff up in your mouth and get stuck in between your teeth later on.
If you eat them like that, they get stuck in your teeth, but sometimes they put them in, like, pudding or something, and they go all like frog spawn.
Yeah.
That is unacceptable as far as I'm concerned.
In any of its forms, I don't like them. I don't think they're necessary. I know they're meant to be a superfood or something, but
yeah. It's
not worth it. There are other superfoods in the world that are a lot nicer.
You may as well eat dirt.
Yeah, it's like a rubbish superhero in the MCU. It's like the Falcon.
Exactly. It's like the Falcon.
It's the Falcon of the superfoods.
Falcon's pretty good, man.
Yeah, he's quite good now.
Actually. Hawkeye.
Yeah, it's the Hawkeye.
Chia seeds are the Hawkeye of the foods.
It's the Hawkeye of the superfoods.
Yeah.
All the other superfoods are there absolutely nailing it, and chia seeds are the little Hawkeye.
So, if Marcus Samuelson says chia seeds, he's out on his ear. Quick shout out, actually. We've been sent some foods. We've been sent some coffee. I'm a coffee boy. I love that. From Independent Coffee Box. Sent us a lovely box of coffee beans. I don't currently own a grinder. Mm. And what a lot of people would do if they received a bag of coffee beans, they'd be like, I can't use these. I'll give them someone with a coffee grinder.
Sure.
Me, always looking for an opportunity to buy a new gadget.
Yeah.
I'm buying a bean grinder.
Good on you. I won't be using them. I gave up caffeine a few years ago. And
if you tell this story more time, you are going to get chucked out of the restaurant.
Up to you. You're cool.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the off menu of Marcus Samuelson. Welcome, Marcus, to Off Menu, and indeed, welcome to the Dream Restaurant.
Thank you very much. Super happy to be here.
Welcome, Marcus, to the Dream Restaurant. Good to see you.
Was that the drum roll?
It was me coming out of my lamp. But nice. You are right, I do have a drum kit this time. For the first time, I've decided to bring drums into the equation. I thought you'd appreciate it.
I you know what I do appreciate?
Yes.
That you guys, you went very mushy on me. I see tablecloth here.
Yes.
I see desserts and snacks over here.
Yeah, and this is genuine. Very nice. This is genuine as well. Sometimes when people come into the Dream Restaurant, they like to imagine what they can see in front of them. But our producer, the great Benito, has genuinely laid out white tablecloths for Marcus's arrival.
Which has never happened before.
It genuinely never happened. And there's grapes.
Yes. Yeah.
You've got grapes and tablecloths. We're surprised there's not like proper malty candles like all over the tables. This is very good, Benito.
I do appreciate the foreign linen and everything. Very nice.
Very nice. Do you consider employing the great Benito to furnish one of your restaurants and do the decor?
Absolutely. Thank you for the ironing here, but it's like, it's nice.
It's homely, I think.
Yeah.
It's very nice. Fancy but homely. Bit of a mix of the two.
I don't normally like a white tablecloth in a restaurant. I'm
going
to put that out there.
Sure.
It feels too fancy for me.
Tablecloth, can I just bring it up today? Tablecloths are gone. There's very few restaurants.
Are they over?
They're over.
Benito, you've embarrassed us in front of Marcus.
Great.
I didn't mean to go back to
tablecloths are over, man.
They're basically gone. But I appreciate. I see the nod. I see you.
Someone told me once, I don't know if this is true, that there was a law so that if you have tablecloths, you have to have a toilet. In a place of, so in a restaurant or a cafe or anything, if there's tablecloths, there has to be a toilet. If you don't have tablecloths, you don't have to have a toilet.
I don't know about that, but I do know that people think about restaurant. They throw this term out, right? But they actually don't know what the word restaurant means. It means to restore a community, right?
Right.
And then you have all these different levels of restaurant that, you know, you might not think about, like restaurants, proper restaurant. Then you have a brasserie that is more big bar and certain selections of beer. Then you have bistro, which is that corner. And then obviously you have a pub, right? So when people say, I went to a restaurant last night, as a chef, I'm almost like, what type of restaurant?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because essentially McDonald's is a restaurant too, right?
Sure.
So this is a term that people say so quickly, but they don't really think about it. And of course, as a chef, you just nerd down in this stuff.
So the restore community thing, is that like what the word literally translates
yes,
as?
Yes, absolutely.
It? I never knew that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
And I try to think about that literally when, in terms of in Harlem where my restaurant is, and I moved to Harlem in New York. I lived in Midtown, moved to Harlem, and I try to commit to hiring everything locally. Mm-hmm. Buying as much local as, and that you eventually when you create jobs within the community, right? So we have music 6 nights a week or comedy even as well. So like we employ 70 musicians. You know, that's not a lot of restaurants that does that.
Wow.
But it has, you know, because there's a lot of bands and all that stuff. So it does impact, you know, the guy who washes the window, the person who delivers the strawberries, we try to do as much as we can in the community. So we just go back to that word.
Because a lot of your place, when you read about a lot of your restaurants, all of them, in the short descriptions of them, always mention, in terms of the food, where they are, and like what cultures you're pulling from and stuff like that. And that seems to be the most important thing is like summing up the community in your food.
Yeah, I mean, I've had... I spent a lot of time to cook for the 1% of the 1%.
Right.
And it was like chasing this thing, like, I have to go to the 3-star Michelin, I have to work in this place. And after you doing that for a long time, you know, my mom was always in my head, it's like, why do you only trust bankers? You didn't grow up with bankers. You grew up with, like, Ava, who worked at the post office, or teachers and stuff like that. And I was like, well, I have to. And the other thing she always said, make something affordable, make something so we can go to it. Like on an everyday basis, So I was like, Mom, you don't know what I'm talking about. I'm about to do this, but and then after 9/11, actually, when I lived in New York, I just rejiggered my whole life. It was such a, you know, like, what the hell is going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was like crazy. So it actually was a starting point for me to move from Midtown to Harlem, rethink the whole value proposition. And 8 years later, I opened Red Rooster with a whole other, you know, more of the way my mom actually said the restaurant should be. And she came, you know, she just passed away a year ago, but she did see the whole thing, and I really, it changed my life, you know, really changed my life.
When you made that change, did you feel like you were taking a risk, or?
I think I needed, you know, I needed to do it. As a creative, you have to transform yourself, right? If you not transform yourself at some point, you're phoning it in. And I had, at that point, I became an executive chef really young. I reached all the stars, and I felt like, you know what? I need to go in a different direction, not knowing what that different direction was, right? So I think that it really prolonged my curiosity and love for cooking even longer, you know? It's a weird way, like, I just had to do it, you know, transform it.
That's probably how the great Benito felt today when he decided to put the tablecloth out.
Put the tablecloth out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's exactly what he went through today.
He knew he had to progress creatively.
You knew it was a big risk that you were taking today. You thought, I'm going to do it, I'm going to put the tablecloths out. It's paying off. Marcus noticed it as soon as he walked in.
Comedians very often, before you go out and do your biggest stuff, you do this, you're testing your material,
yeah,
right?
Mm, for sure.
We
yeah.
do the same as chef. We do yeah. tons of pop-ups before, right? Or we cook for our friends, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, one way I like that because you want to be prepped, but another way I don't like it because there's a little bit level of that, you know, that there's an adrenaline rush that you want in cooking, right? And you want an anticipation. You don't want everything to be perfection. There's another perfection. It's more alive, you know. It's a more alive gig than it is a super produced gig. You know,
right?
What I mean?
Yeah.
So finding that balance between this beautiful chaos that a great restaurant really is, when it's hitting on all cylinder versus this perfection where you don't know where to put the knife and the fork. You know what I mean? So creating that.
But I think there's parallels there because yeah. I think quite a lot of comedians would say they come up with their best stuff not when they're sitting down trying to think of it, but when yeah. they're on stage doing a big gig and it's a good audience. Like that's when those things start firing.
Yeah.
And if it's it must be a similar thing if you're sort of rushing around in a really busy service.
Yeah. No, I think about a lot of the food. I think about right before I fall asleep and I take notes, or when I flush them out when I travel more, right? Mm-hmm. Because then you actually have to say, I mean, if I fly back to New York tomorrow, then I can actually, you know, sit and relook that idea. What is that idea? Like, it's a note I want to hit. And I also think a lot of food from Africa, because there is a, you know, so much of the food that we eat today came from Africa, but the authorship of that has been taken away. So, like, you think about, oh, this is really good French coffee.
Yeah.
Like, where in France is the coffee bean? Or this Belgian chocolate is fantastic. Like, where in Brussels is the cocoa bean, right? So the authorship of Africa and the aspirations always ripped out, right?
Right, yeah.
So it would be like, imagine, like, Nigeria would own Microsoft and Google tomorrow. You know, that's an absurd idea, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the same thing if you're in Ghana you're farming cocoa beans. Do you know what I mean? So I think a lot about that as, like, how do I reframe that and introduce original food from Africa in a way that, you know, a London audience can eat it and get with it without it becoming headache? Because once you come to the restaurant, you just want to have fun and be with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
It's your job as a guest is gone by then, right?
Yeah,
just entertain
yeah.
you and, you know.
But it's good to, it's still nice when I went to a place yesterday in Brixton Village.
Yeah.
Cool. And I'd read about it online and it said all of the ingredients that they use are bought in the village about from the different fishmongers or something like that. So I was thinking about that all the way through the meal and it was really nice and engaging. Yeah. And at the end when I was paying the bill, I said, hey, I've heard, you know, it's all from the village here. And they went, no.
That's brilliant.
That's a lie. We got you in.
Completely different experience. Yeah. When all I've been thinking about was, wow, this was like just, they bought it from the road from that local fishmonger. Like,
chef,
no, no.
Kill that service. Like, it's really been working. Like, and then Antonio, 21, is like, no, it's not.
No. I don't know where you read that. That's absolutely bullshit. See you later. Thanks, guys.
Love it.
So here at the Dream Restaurant, nothing, it doesn't have to be local, of course.
Well,
because the genie can get it from wherever you want.
It's the restaurant of the world, so everywhere's local.
Yeah.
So wherever you want.
Can I tell you a couple of stories about that?
Sure.
Yeah. That's right. So when I was like in my mid-20s, whatever, I went to the then considered the best restaurant by far in the world. It's called El Bulli, and it's on the coast of Barcelona. And Ferran Adrià is our Messi, Maradona. Mm-hmm. He's like the god of this, right? And he's like the brilliant genius, right? And I'm like, I have my Spanish friend there. He's translating, and I've arrived. I'm talking to the master, right? And he's like, are you from New York? I said, yes. Marcus, do you know Robert De Niro? I was like, no, I don't. But he's like, but you're from New York. I was like, I am. And now I'm getting nervous because I don't really know how to answer. It's like, I don't know Robert De Niro. I like you. I want to be here. And then it's like, so do you know Madonna? I was like,
no, 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 there's two. But I don't, she's like, you don't live in New York. And I'm like, chef, I live in New York. I'm like, I live in New York, but I don't know Madonna and I don't know Robert De Niro. And then it's like, well, then it's like, no, don't pay no attention. Then it comes back a little bit later. If I'm going to open in New York, and my translator's like, we're going back and forth.
Yeah.
I want Robert De Niro and Madonna as servers. Can you make that happen? And I thought, fuck it, I just want to leave. This was supposed to be my biggest day and I had speech to get for him. And he's asking me about De Niro and Madonna. Like, so that was the dream restaurant for me, but he didn't end up.
Yeah. Sure.
And then, like, 15 years later, I did take him out when he came to New York and we had dinner together.
Yeah.
I was like, don't bring up this for De Niro and Madonna.
Yeah.
But that was my god, Ferran. That was my god.
Well, since we're in the dream restaurant now, would you like to have your dinner with De Niro and Madonna? I can sort that out for you.
I can tell you, I Robert De Niro comes to the restaurant now.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I've told him this story. He laughs. And he loves coming to Red Rooster Harlem because it's we set it up so he can, you know, he can just hang out. He doesn't have to worry about stuff.
Oh, that's great. That did you immediately contact... how about this? Yeah. Are you like this? I know De Niro now. So we start the meal, as always, with a choice of still or sparkling water.
I'm going to go for a still, just very simple.
We always go for still, or do you ever change it up depending on where you are, what the meal is?
Fizz is nice sometimes. So I like sparkling, but there's some, like, I think I would go still.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every now and then, if I need to wake up, like, sparkling is a little bit better.
Oh, so that maybe, would you start it in the morning? Would you start the day with some sparkling water?
No, it's morning, afternoon when I get tired.
We have a big debate over this. James thinks that sparkling water wakes the mouth up and cleans his teeth.
Yeah.
He does that.
Sometimes. He thinks that if the bubbles clean scum off the teeth.
God, sometimes I wake up and I have a scummy mouth and it's horrible. And if I'm in a hotel, there's often a bottle of still and a bottle of sparkling on the bedside.
You're standing in fancy, posh places. I don't stay in places like that.
Me and Marcus get up in the morning and brush our teeth.
Yeah. I've never linked it to brushing the teeth. I think they're brilliant, actually.
I do brush my teeth afterwards. I like to point that out. Yeah. But it's just a good first thing on the mouth, some sparkling water straight away all over the scum. And I've likened this to it before, but every time on dishwasher adverts, they show the little tablet go in and all the bubbles go in and clean all the grime off all the dishes.
That's what you think about.
That's what I think about every time I put the fizzy water in my mouth.
Yeah.
That all the bubbles are going in between all my teeth.
I don't know how scummy your mouth is in the morning. I don't know what you're doing at night.
Oh, it's absolutely scummy. I think I'm sleepwalking and sleep eating. Because like it is absolute scum fest in there when I wake up.
I like it. I like that. I've never thought about it from that point of view, but that's really smart.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. It is smart.
I never thought you'd be called smart.
Yeah. Bad luck. You try to checkmate me there. But I'm now a genius.
Yeah.
So unlucky.
Ice in the still water or just straight up?
Straight up. Straight up. Oh, yeah. No ice.
No citrus?
A citrus would be nice. I don't like the ice. It's just like it gets cubey and it gets like on your teeth. Like it's a texture thing. Like, no.
You don't like to crunch the ice?
Mm-mm, mm-mm.
What about crushed ice?
Crushed ice in a cocktail is great. Yeah. You know? And you get that first, second sip. I mean, again, as a chef, you overthink about this shit, and I'm sorry to be
technical. No, that's what we want. That's what we like.
There's so much of what we can all taste the same thing, right? Sweet, hot, spicy, umami, sour, bitter, right? We can all taste that. But how we taste it comes down to really aesthetic, right? If something doesn't look right, piece of bread, fish, you know, and then the aroma, and then texture. Mm-hmm. And texture is part of like a cocktail, right? Like you have a glass of water, you have a cocktail, you have a big ice cube. 10 minutes later, that cocktail still has the same flavor. If you have bad ice cube, it's all watery, mm-hmm. right? So you can, that's really how chefs go through their sauces. What type of texture do you want? What type of mouthfeel? If you eat a dish like, let's say sushi, right? It's, for me, it's all texture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good fish, it's really fish dish with a little bit of rice, right? But if that rice, perfect sushi, the rice should be warm, it should be small, and the fish should be the perfect balance between rice and fish. And it's a texture dish. If you eat too much rice, it just becomes chewing gum, right? So texture is such a big part of how to enjoy and eat a dish.
Yeah, well, I with the ice and cocktails thing, absolutely, because like I had a Bloody Mary I'm on tour at the moment,
mm-hmm.
and at the moment I'm just trying to find where to get the best Bloody Mary
one nice.
On tour, because you always have to choose a food or drink thing
yeah.
to kind of make the theme. And most Bloody Marys I've had have been good, mm-hmm. but this one the other day had crushed ice in it, and it was a revelation.
Nice.
It was so much better than all the ice cubes I've been having everywhere else, because it was just like... I didn't know what it was at the time, but now
yeah.
you said about the texture thing,
texture, yeah.
makes me think that maybe it was that.
Are you a Bloody Mary guy with garnish? Do you like the stuff that they... Because now, of
yeah.
course, the trendy cocktail bars are all you like. They put everything
sure.
from jalapeno, shrimp, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Do you like that or you don't like that?
Well, the best one I've had so far was with olives in it and olive brine in it as
nice.
Well.
Nice.
And that was the best one I've had.
Nice.
And it had thyme in it too. And
yeah.
like, I had the most amount of stuff, like, I've had in like...
So most for your money. You get
yeah,
stuff
yeah,
with
it. Yeah,
there's
a lot
good.
In there, but like, it was a
well,
good flavour.
That's
and
the
I
thing
like
about
spicy.
Ice cubes, quite yeah. often... I'm drinking a cocktail with ice cubes in it. I'm thinking, you've just put these ice cubes in, mm. so there's less booze in it.
I love yeah. that. That's a paranoid
it's
one.
It's just...
Am I paying for this? I love that.
I had a phenomenal cocktail a couple of nights ago at a place called Incognito
in
near Carnaby Street, and it was a nori old fashioned. So
oh, nice.
They used like the seaweed in mm-hmm. the old fashioned. It was incredible. But it had three ice cubes in it,
mm-hmm.
and it was in a little tiny glass, and I thought... Take those ice cubes out. We could get another sip out of this.
Yep.
Oh my god.
Do feel like that sometimes.
Look, this is just like a masterpiece, right?
Yeah.
They thought about salt. They thought
yeah.
about umami. They thought about all this. And he's like, "Hey, can you top it off a little bit?" I love it.
I am a representation of a difficult customer, Marcus.
I love that. Poor guy. It's like
England.
He's got everything. Oh my god!
We're the biggest stingers in the world.
Yeah.
Think
yeah. Go on, mate. Pour it. Go on, mate.
Come on. Let's pop those ice cubes out. And put a little bit more of the cocktail in, please.
Pop those or bread. Pop those. Or bread, Marcus? Pop nubs or bread? Pop nubs or bread?
Bread. Bread.
Bread.
Definitely.
Yeah?
Bread.
Always bread?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there's never an option really for pop nubs or bread, but you would always.
I love like the whole idea of breaking bread, and bread tells you also so much of where you are, right?
Yeah.
I was born in Ethiopia, and our bread there is also a staple. So, like injera bread, we eat with our hands.
Mm. Oh, I love it
and,
so
and
much.
And that's
yes.
dipping that. So, brown bread.
That bread is so
We've
good.
We've had some good
nice.
Ethiopian meals
yeah.
together.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that.
Again, going
so
back to Brixton Village, there's a
yeah.
place there, and like they get injera bread ordered in,
mm-hmm.
And it's just so... Nice. The first time I had it, it was
blew my mind. I've never had any texture again.
Yeah. Yeah,
never had anything that texture and the little sour note on
yeah.
it. And you're right,
it's
part of the ritual of like
yeah.
of ripping it and dipping it. It's...
So that bread is it's probably the oldest bread in the world, right? Because it was started thousands of years ago, and it's a fermentation. So it's teff that grows only in Ethiopia, actually. So you take the teff and then you put water into it, and then it ferments for 2 days. And then once you have that, you can continue with it, right? And then you cook it like a pancake, like a crepe, basically. But you only cook it on one side. That's why it gets so bubbly and the fermentation. And but you don't. If you flip it on both sides, then it gets crispy, and which is not, then you can't
mm-hmm.
break it.
Yeah.
So that is like the key to that, and it comes down to fully breaking bread, right? And it's one of those distinct things that if you've had Ethiopian food, you know that that's what you've had it with, right? It's
yes.
almost like eating a couscous from Morocco or something like that. You know you've had Moroccan food. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just as soon as you have it, it's a revelation. You want to find out where
yeah.
other Ethiopian
yeah.
restaurants are near you. Because,
yeah.
like, you know, I think the first time I had it was I was in Amsterdam with my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Took me to this place, and then when I got home, I was just looking for places where I could have.
I love that. Like it was really you telling me that you really went to Amsterdam for the Ethiopian. We all know why you went to Amsterdam. That was nice. Just like nice one. Good work there. Good. I appreciate it. As an Ethiopian, I'll take it. Take it. Nice, nice.
Is that the kind of bread you would like for this meal?
Yeah, absolutely.
That, right.
Absolutely.
So we come to your starter now.
Yeah.
This is where the big guns start.
Can we talk about location first?
If you want...
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, because I want to be in the Ethiopian savannah. I want to be where there's red clay. And I want my restaurant is outdoor.
Yeah.
Because we all... at least me, when I'm so happy when we eat outside, whether it's picnic or outdoor, like American barbecue, whatever it is, it's just like nice to sit outside, you know? So we would be, it would be a big party, big block party
mm-hmm.
outside, and the injera bread would come out. And then we have, you know, that's some good, maybe bourbon and some good liquor, you know what I mean? Just to get it going, because everybody don't know each other, you know?
Are you having stuff
straight in with the bourbon?
Yeah.
Are you having things with the injera bread as well, so you can
yes.
cook it up with it?
There's a bunch of dip sauces. There's a little bit of chickpea puree, some lentils.
Yeah.
But then also, just to create a conversation there, there would be some herring, because I grew up on herring.
I grew up
in Sweden. And just to watch the faces of people like, you know, Ethiopians eating like fermented Swedish herring.
It'd be brilliant.
It's like, you know, it's really like when you have kimchi the first time, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like so weird and strange. Yeah. That's what that Swedish herring would be.
Yeah.
You know, so
you were born in Ethiopia. When did you move to Sweden?
When I was a kid, 3 years. My sister and I, we had tuberculosis, and we were adopted to a Swedish family. And then so I really grew up in Sweden and grew up right outside Gothenburg on a little island. And, a fishing village. Right? My father he became a geologist, but he was really a fishy, like he grew up as a fishing boy, and that's his DNA. That was his DNA.
Right.
So going between these two worlds, between like the fishing village versus the city, that was been my life, basically back and forth.
I saw a film recently set in Sweden, and they tried to make someone eat a herring whole, and it looked quite.
Yeah,
quite
I'm not
disgusting.
Sure the film Midsommar is comparable to what Sweden's actually like, James.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was a good representation. I mean, they have meals outdoors in that film.
They do have they meals do. Outdoors.
Have you seen
Midsommar? I'm not, but I will go and check it out.
I mean, I don't. It's not. I would not say it's representational of what Sweden is
so far,
actually offers.
What Mark has described.
Yeah.
They are outdoors and eating herring.
I'm not sure if you're drinking.
It's not in Ethiopia. It's a good film.
It's a good film, but I don't think you should view it.
The herring bit, is very what because it's like a horror film basically.
Yeah.
And when they try and feed someone the herring whole, it's quite horrible to watch, because it's during this moment where, you know, everything's quite uncomfortable for her. She's not sure she wants to be there, and then they try and force feed her a herring whole down her throat while she's sitting there, and she's a bit drugged up as well.
That's
when you said that you'd had some herring beforehand. Yeah. That's all I could think of, and it makes me. This is the scariest meal we've had so far.
You know, it is interesting with herring and fish and bones and all of that stuff. Mm. So, for example, if you've ever had Nigerian food, you know the fufu, like the basically the mashed potato, right? Like the fufu people eat. And it's also called swallow, right? So you take a piece of fufu, imagine like mashed potatoes, right?
Yeah.
But it's done with, it can be done with plantains, it can be done with cassava, whatever, right? And then they pour a stew on top of it, which has fish and bones in it and okra and all that stuff. And you just dip that and you just swallow in one bite. And the very first time you do that, like, it's all bones, it's all that stuff. And you're not supposed to kind of, like, if you are, like, you know, going like, this thing, it's a lot of bones and stuff like that. You're like, dude, you got to go. You got to go. So the very first time I did that, I was like, so I can relate to the bitch. I was her.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were listening to Fela Kuti. I was deep in Lagos. And I wanted to be the cool guy. So I was like, I'm going to do this. But I bunch of fish bones in my throat. It did not work out well for me.
And do you get better at eating that over time? Is that
I did not. Like, it's one of those things, like, you're there, this is what everyone is doing, and you're clearly the odd one out. You know what I mean? And you just have to accept it that end of the day, I'm a Swedish kid. You know?
Yeah. So already, before we've even started your meal, you've established that, you know, you got Ethiopian bread and Swedish fish going on.
Yeah.
Is your starter, like, also following this pattern of places you've lived in, growing up in?
Yeah, I mean, I would go with, I will start with something very, like, ceviche, like a Peruvian fish, just clean and like, but just delicious with citrus and just so people can just eat. There is something about when people eat fish, like people are always curious, can I eat this raw? That's a question.
Yeah.
Unless you come, yes, you can. You know what I mean? Like people drink a Coca-Cola with all kinds of shit in it. Never question, like, is this good for me? But there's fresh fish from the ocean. Like, can I eat this raw? I'm like, what are you talking about? You're eating stuff out of a tube or jams or like, you know.
Yeah.
So anyways, I will do that. That's a good one. And we're outside, and people will still pick up
quite a light, fresh start to the meal.
Yes, light. And then I will definitely have, Swedish aquavit, so vodka with some, you know, toasted caraway seeds and maybe some citrus and cucumber in it. you know, so you get that. The cucumber makes it go down really, really nice.
So, and we've already had some bourbon, so people are really getting to know each other now.
People are a bit buzzy now by this point.
Getting a bit buzzy.
And this is all mixed in with the ceviche or the vodka.
Like you want, that's clean and light. You know? And yeah, that would be fun.
Is there a place in particular you've had like this fresh fish that's been, that really sticks in your mind as being the best or the first time you had it?
I would say, the way fish was treated when I worked in Japan, it's just something I always think about how. That is the moment where I always think about how can I replicate that? The cutting of the fish, the treatment of everything, how they hang it, everything. Mm. But then I want very little on it. I'm like salt, lemon juice, leave it alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, just keep it so clean. And that is probably, today we consider it maybe more Peruvian, but like for me, I love crudo or ceviches, or I grew up with Gravlax cured salmon, but just less is more, you know, really good fish.
Yeah. I think that's a bit of a, as soon as you start eating more food or paying attention to what you like, that's when you start realizing that, yeah, the best stuff is, the less stuff on it, the better it is. Because I used to always, on the menu, I'd look for what's got, what's got the most amount of stuff on it. It's I love all that stuff.
Yeah,
the simple one is probably.
No, but I think it's all ingredient based too, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have an incredible piece of fish, you don't want a lot on it. You want a texture that is, might be a little bit creamy, so maybe you put a little bit of avocado underneath and one piece of salted cucumber, and that height, that's the whole dish, right? Mm. So it's really stay out of it, right? Like, treat that fish and then just a little support.
But then on the opposite end of the scale, if you've got a fish which is like full of bones and all of that, then you want to put it in a stew where there's like it's part of another flavor.
Yeah,
and
so
then
maybe
you can
curry.
Really just
choke it exactly. We're back to the Swedish Midsummer or me and Legos. No, and at least in Legos I looked the part, right? I had the pants.
Sure.
I had my fila kuti on. Yeah. I knew exactly how to do it. But then when it came to swallow, I was like, just get adopted. Is it Swedish? And you get thrown out. So
it's a good starter because you've gone light. Too often I make that mistake of going to a restaurant and just going all guns blazing from the starter.
Nice.
Every time I go to, have you been to the Hawksmoor before? It's like a steak restaurant.
Yeah.
It's a little chain of steak restaurants in London. I think there's some in Manchester as well. But they've got the best starter I've ever had, which is it's pork belly essentially, but it's pork belly ribs, and they come out two of them for a starter with the nicest sauce on them. Mm-hmm. And every time I get that, I eat that, and I think, well, that's my meal done now. So much delicious fat in it, but I'm like, I'm full, and I've just ordered a tomahawk steak. It was an absolute disaster.
I love it. You are so predictable. I love it. You are that guy. Where is that guy? He's here. I love it.
I'm like, I'm full already. Take that ice out of my cocktail.
Can I tell you, like, at this dinner party though?
Yeah.
I would invite Arsene Wenger.
Okay.
I'm an Arsenal fan, huge Arsenal fan. I'm so miserable right now, right? Because Arsenal is doing so bad.
Right.
And we don't even have an approach coming up to the season, right?
Yeah.
And every day is depressing because if you go on your sports and it's like every day you see Manchester City buying a new player or Liverpool buying a new player or even United is getting the act together and Tottenham is now better than Arsenal, right? Out of all places. And I was like, I couldn't escape this shit. It annoys me so much. So I was like, oh, screw it. And I don't want to fold in and just become a Manchester City fan. You can't do that.
You can't do that.
We don't know that much about football, but we know you can't do that.
Even me and Ed know you can't do that.
Yeah.
So I don't know who knew that or whatever, right? You just can't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you think I got when I was gone and I came back to my restaurant? What do you think I got from my guys? A brand new Manchester City shirt with my name on the back. That's like, that's horrible. So now I guess it is. Like, yep.
That now. They'll be able to tell, though. It'll be like when you're eating that hair, all the fish bones down your throat. Yeah. The Man City fans will be able to tell that you're an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
Try and style that out.
But it's a little bit like restaurants, it's the same thing. Like, anything, like, everyone wanted to get Arsene Wenger out. They got him out. And now they're just wishing he would come back. Yeah. Because like, yeah. And it's the same with restaurant or content, whatever you go to. It's like, it was always better back then. No, it wasn't.
Yeah. So, you know? So if Arsene Wenger is at this big outdoor meal that you've got going on, what are you talking to him about?
Are you
going
to try and convince him to come back?
I just be like, what happened, man? Yeah. I was like supporting for 20 years. Yeah. And it's just like, you have no idea how it is to be an Arsenal fan. You're almost always there. Yeah. But it's like you're swimming and you just can't quite get to the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've been in the pool for a long time now. You just want to get to the finish line.
I love the idea of you inviting Arsene Wenger to Ethiopia to come for a dinner party.
Yeah.
He's so excited, sitting outside, beautiful surroundings, and it's just you with a bottle of bourbon going, what happened, man?
What happened?
And you and your friends, like, calm down. Well, you see. And
he'll give you honest answers. Yeah. It's the start. I mean, he's already had, like, his body weight in booze. So you're going to get some pretty honest answers.
I would invite Gazza, though. He would definitely be.
Sure.
Definitely.
Sure, maybe. He'd bring his own sandwiches as well.
Listen, he could just.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today's episode of Off Menu is sponsored by Aura. James, are you ready to win Mother's Day?
I am, Ed. I want to cement my reputation as the best gift giver in the family. I'm going to give my mom an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos.
May I say, James, I absolutely love the class and elegance with which you use the word mom, because this is for US listeners.
All of your moms deserve a good Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos.
Yeah, I think your mum's going to love looking back on your childhood memories, seeing what you're up to today, seeing what you're up to back in the day, and even better, with unlimited storage and an easy-to-use app, you can keep updating mom's frame with new photos, so it's the gift that keeps on giving, James.
Ed, answer me this. Who is the best gift giver in your life?
I'd probably say my wife is a very good gift giver. Not that my mom is not a fantastic gift giver, but my wife's very good at little surprise things. She says, I've only got you a few things, and then there'll be little surprises, things that we've seen throughout the rest of the year. I'll say to my wife, I like that, and then I forget about it. And then on the day, there's some lovely little gifts there for me that remind us of the year that we've just spent together.
Oh, if you like being reminded of stuff, may I suggest photographs?
That's a very good point, James. I think we should get ourselves an Aura digital picture frame and put some of our wedding photos on them.
Right now, Ed, Aura has a great deal for Mom's Day, Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AURAframes.com. Use code OFFMENU at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
So we come to your main course.
Yes.
Now, what I like so far is that your starter, a lot of people would be like, oh, I had this great thing somewhere else. Or someone would be like, oh, here's my vague favourite dish.
Yeah.
Because you're a chef, you basically created you've made your own starter there.
Yeah.
So is that what we're doing with the main course as well?
No, with the main course, there's two stations. There is a barbecue station where we just roasting, and you've been cooking it for all day, and that, yes, as a chef, you enjoy that. You're setting up. There's a smoke in the fire. You have your bourbon and your aquavit,
yes,
and with that, it's tons of vegetables that we just roast and grill. And then the other part of it is actually a very traditional Ethiopian thing where you eat raw meat. You basically, I remember when my wife and I got married, and we had a party in Ethiopia, and all these like Westerns, like Swedes and Americans came. And you basically have a butcher station where he just butchers the meat in front of you, because most of the food in Ethiopia is vegetarian food. So you only basically eat meat at big occasions.
Yeah.
So to see in these like New Yorkers coming with their plate and these butchers carving raw meat, and it's not like a tartar where it's like actually finely chopped. It's actually a cube of raw beef, right? And it's such an obscure, it's such a different way of eating.
Yeah, totally.
And there you are dipping like a good, you know, like cube of raw beef, and you're dipping it into a little bit of berbere, this spice plant, right? Mm. And Ethiopians loves it because it's like, oh, we don't have meat that often, and this is like a big deal. But then I would love to see Arsène and Paul Mooney dip, and you know, it would be brilliant. It would be brilliant.
Yeah. And is it a dish that, like, do you like the taste of it? Is it something that you would look forward to?
So I like the other, the chopped version of that is called kitfo, and it's like a beef tartare.
Yeah.
I love that version because you can swallow it. They're back to swallow it. Yeah, you can swallow a little bit different. The very first time I had the big cubes, I was like, what do I do with it? I cook it. And everybody else was just like eating this big, rich, chewing on this big.
Yeah.
It's difficult, but that's also what's great with traveling, right? It's so foreign to you.
Yeah.
Right? And you're really somewhere else, you know, and that would be cool.
So you've gone for like opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
Something that would take a long time.
Yeah. Yes.
Something that's straight away. Yeah.
And I got to get the pork belly from my man, so that's it. That's all about.
There you go. You get to eat at the bit. That's one of the guests.
I can come along.
Yeah.
So so you say you're roasting vegetables and stuff on there. What sort of vegetables are you going for?
I would probably go for, like, let's say corn, a little bit of cabbage, like big things, you know what I mean? Like, you just like gets a little texture to it, and it's just lovely, like sweet corn, but with some, you know, cabbage that you just glaze a little bit and put a little bit maybe of honey on it or something like that.
Nice.
So we always talk, me and Ed watch a TV show on Netflix called Barbecue Pitmasters.
Yeah.
Where people just, competitive barbecue, basically. And it's a lot about who's the best at barbecuing. If you're like, because, you know, this is your dream meal, I don't want you working. I don't want you having to do it yourself.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Of all the people in the world, all the pit masters you've met, all the people who do barbecue, who is it that you want manning that barbecue station?
That's my man, Rodney Scott.
Yeah?
He's the best barbecue guy in the world.
Tell us a bit about him.
No, Rodney is amazing. His father actually started in Livingston in South Carolina. He's a mop guy, and, you know, they smoke it all throughout the whole night. Now he moved to Charleston, but Rodney is amazing. He is, every barbecue guy knows, like, Rodney is the guy, you know.
What is it about his barbecue?
I mean,
so good.
It takes a long time. He does it with pork, you know, in South Carolina, which has better fat content than beef. I would say my two favorite barbecues in the States is LA Barbecue in Austin, Texas. Done by these incredible women, and then and Rodney in South Carolina.
Right.
And I got to give the upper hand to my man Rodney. Like, Rodney cooks with me. He comes to Harlem and cooks with me. We put him outside. He has his bottle of bourbon, and the whole community comes up, and he's just there carving, and we give away. It's just everything. You just listen
amazing
to great music, and it's his night, and you just step aside and like, wow, this is special. This is cool. Yeah.
And is it? And so your meal, he's doing some pork, and there's some beef. There's some raw beef.
Yeah, exactly. That he would not have to do anything with the raw beef. That would be like, I would like a real authentic Ethiopian butcher.
Yeah.
Quite don't know if he's gonna stab you. But it's like, you know, it's brilliant. You know, I probably have someone like I wanted Mark Pierre White there too.
Right,
like the young Marc Pierrot, you know, like when I was coming up as a chef, right, there was no, forget finding, I mean, it's before internet, right, so it's like there's no connectivity. Mm-hmm. You have the French chefs, right, and Paul Bocuse and all that stuff, and then all of a sudden you started reading about this guy from London, like he had long hair, he smoked. I was like, fuck, this is unbelievable. And then one day, my sister actually gave me this book called White Heat, with a picture with him, long hair, cigarette. I was like, this kid is just like 10 years older than me.
Yeah.
And for a black kid, it's like, he's not French, and he got long hair.
Yeah.
That was my level of diversity. Like, if he can fucking do it, because he wasn't French.
Yeah, right?
And he had long hair. And it was a true eye-opener for me, like, oh, fuck it. Sorry, I'm cursing. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
So if he can do it, I that was a big eye-opener for me. It was like, it's really been 3-4 people in the world that really, for me, opened, you know, the door from changed everything for me.
Sure. I remember hearing Marco Pia White being interviewed once, and it blew my mind because we were talking about like steak and dishes like that. And he said, I never, if I'm doing steak on a menu, I never offer the diner the choice of how it should be cooked. I'm the expert. I tell you how it's going to be cooked. Like, that is brilliant.
Yeah.
What a bad boy.
Yeah. No, I love. And I mean, that book for me made me even more. You know, there's Charlie Trotter. He passed away. He's an American chef. He changed the American food scene also. Mark Pierre White. There's this lady. She just passed away, Leah Chase. Mm-hmm. She just died 95 years, 96 years old. She just died like 2 months ago in New Orleans. Like, she set up a restaurant in the 40s, and it's still open. And she set up the restaurant in a time where black and white people couldn't eat together. So the first 15 years of having the restaurant open, she broke the law every day because she invited everybody. Wow. All the musicians came, Frank Sinatra, Miles Davis, everybody. And then she really took risks to stay open. All the things that we take for granted or like, you know what I mean? Like, she sat, you know, like she was arrested. All the civil rights movements was planned in her basement. So like people, so Leah has always been somebody that completely changed for me. It's like I went there, I knew her, I cooked with her. And Charlie Trotter, again, it was this idea of, you don't have to be French. Like, you know, I was coming up that everyone was French, right? Mm. And I was like, how does a black Swede fit into this mix, right? And looking at Marc Pierrot and looking at Charlie Trotter, that was like, wow, this is, you can actually do it. And I remember I saved up enough money to go to, I think it was called Mirabelle at the time, Marc Pierrot's white high-end restaurant here. You know, and I'd like borrow like a jacket and, you know, I'd like waiter's pants on and all this stuff. And I went there and it was horrible. And it was like, it was all the money I had, right? And like, you know, they looked at, who's this guy? Clearly, I couldn't afford wine. And it's like, forget that. I was like, I'm here for the food. And it wasn't horrible. It was just like, you know, the kid that served me, right? He poured something on top of me right away, right? And you could tell, like, he had no intention of cleaning me up. He just looked over and made sure that he would not be get yelled at. Yeah. You have, like, I'm, like, 22. This kid is maybe, like, 23. He's looking at me. If you don't say anything, I'm not going to get fired. And I'm sitting there with sauce in my borrowed uncle's jacket. And I'm, like, I'm eating the whole meal through that. And no one comes up and checks if I'm okay. They're only making sure, like, Marc Pierrot don't find out. Yeah. So they're not going to get fired. And I was so confused about it. Like, is this fine dining?
Yeah.
But I am. I surely paid that it was fine dining.
It's just the regime of terror because of one chef. Yeah.
And it was still amazing. And I, you know, I checked it off, and I've had these epiphanies a bunch of, like, you know, when you have no money and you're a young chef, and anytime you have a little bit of money, all you do is to go to that place and spend all your money.
Right,
right?
Yeah.
It's just weird. You might work 9 months to have one meal, right? And one time I went to France to eat at Alain Ducasse because I read that he served vegetarian tasting menu.
Right.
And I was like, whoa. You can have multi-course vegetarian meal? I didn't believe it. I was like, this is unbelievable. Like, it's, I have to go. So same jacket with a stain, rolling into Monte Carlo by myself. And I had a vegetarian tasting menu at like 20, you know, 23. Mm. Broke again, of course. Mm. But it was unbelievable. Like, it opens. It's like hearing Prince for the first time. Like, you hear like the wedding band, and then you hear Prince, like, whoa, what is this? You know what I mean? Yeah.
I went for a meal recently with my family, and the waiter spilled a load of stuff all over my dad. But
Sorry.
He spilled it, and the waiter immediately... I've never seen a waiter react like this before. I've seen waiters spill stuff, but he spilled all of my dad, and then he instantly went, oh, fucking hell, look at that. Whoa, that went all over, holy shit, that's all over you.
But what happened to your dad?
My dad was just sat there with stuff on him, and then eventually the guy was like, oh, do you want me to clear that up? My dad was like, yeah, if you could just get me a cloth or something, that'd be great. So he got him the cloth, but at the end of the meal, the same waiter, we were paying for it, and the waiter went...
But wait a minute. They should take that off.
Yeah.
Yes.
We actually did get money taken off the bill at the end, and the waiter said to us at the end, "Yeah, I've taken that money off for those. Those dishes were free. Also, I just wondered if you could give me some tips. I've just started on the open mic comedy circuit." And I was like,
"That is brilliant."
So I ended up giving this guy tips. I was like, "Well, first of all, I know you thought that joke was funny at the start of the meal, but no one else laughed. So you've got to really work on your own stuff. Yeah, make sure that
slapstick doesn't really work in the clubs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't go and just like
that's great.
That's brilliant. That's really good. I'm still checking out. I'm still thinking about your dad and all this stuff.
Just sitting there. Also, that would be even funnier if you'd met his dad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. God. Best person for it to happen to. Yeah. A very serious man. Yeah. Especially when the joke's on him. He does not like it.
Oh,
and that was bad.
Did you practice on your family when you guys were coming up? Like, was your sister or brothers like... No, not again.
I think I naturally have my brother and sister's sense of humour. They're so nice if my brother and sister come to see me.
Yeah.
And there's some jokes in the set that have always been in the set, never really got laughs.
Yeah.
And I've been like, but I keep them in because I like
them. Yeah, they're great.
And then that night, my brother or sister is the only one I hear laughing, and I realise that's why it's
yeah,
in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But it is, it's interesting because I grew up in a family, I was the youngest, and my sister, she was always more talented than me. Like, whatever it was, right? Even cooking, even to this day, like, I think about food and I have to go through it and motion. My sister can come up with shit, right? Like, in a different way. And so, you know, when you tried out stuff, you still have that dynamic of older and younger sisters.
Yeah.
So she's like, she's not a chef, but I try out a dish. She's like, you know, it's okay, but she's never done this. I'm like, what are you talking about? You don't know anything about this dish. Yeah, yeah. But then she actually, if we're the summer house together, right? She does a version of the next day. I'm like, fuck, it's good. That is, she's like naturally gifted. And she's like, I don't know what you're going on about. You
my dad, will speak to me like he knows more about comedy than I do. Because I think that's the thing with comedy as well, is that everyone thinks they're an expert because everyone's made someone laugh in the past.
Listen, that's cooking. Yeah, and I'm everyone thinks they can cook. I'm like, you should just eat.
Yeah, you should just eat.
I'm happy to fill that role. I'll just
eat. Oh, my God.
My dad will always come to a show and go, yeah, it was a good show, better than last year's.
Yeah.
And you're a little bit edgier this year, and I enjoyed that. You're pushing more. Well done.
Oh, my
Ed's
God.
Ed's dad is crazy. Is that fair enough?
Pretty crazy. He would also be hilarious to drop a full tray of stuff on.
Oh, I'd love to see someone drop a full tray of stuff on your dad.
Yeah.
Your side dish now. We come to your side dish.
Nice, nice.
Now, you know, I'm quite excited because obviously you've got this like barbecue there, raw meat there. Maybe the start is going to be like the bridge between the two of them.
Yeah.
Maybe like a...
And then there's this guy, Ferran Adrià, walks around asking if Robert De Niro is coming.
It's a good Robert De Niro is coming.
You know who's also coming? Your dad with the stuff. He's got to bring the stuff.
My dad will be sitting in the splash zone.
Yeah.
Absolutely. absolutely tidal waves of food over him for the whole...
Someone drops a whole cow on him.
Yeah. Can I get more of that?
Look at that shit. You got a whole cow on you.
Mate. Oh my God.
Yeah, he'll be there. Oh, here we go. Wait, my dad rarely gets invited to these dream restaurant meals, so this will be a good one for
him.
And I know he likes that bread, so like he'd be happy to start with.
Absolutely. So no sides. I would probably just do a lot of the vegetables that is there. And then maybe something like really simple but like a good pasta, like a good gnocchi or something like that. Just like, because it's always comforting to having something like that. Just like, you know, baste them on potatoes, maybe some roasted garlic, and then adding in good olive oil, some almonds, and just like garlic, and maybe a little bit of kale or greens. Just that's it.
Well, gnocchi is something that I've like probably only got into in the last like, I don't know, 5 years. I started eating it and like, so I really like it, but I'd say I wouldn't know what makes a good one.
So like, you can make, we can go through it. It's very,
please.
You want to roast the potato first. You want to start there, right? So they don't get mealy and watery. So you just roast sweet potatoes or potatoes. Just roast them until they're soft. Then you scrape them out, and then you add it. You don't want them heavy. So that comes down to don't use too much flour, right? So this is your potatoes, a little bit of olive oil, a little bit of flour, salt, maybe some nutmeg. You want same time as you roast the potatoes, maybe you roast 2-3 pieces of garlic as well. So you just mash that up. That's your gnocchi. So the key thing on something, a gnocchi gets heavy, is because they have too much flour in it. And so you just want a little bit of flour to bind it, maybe an egg yolk, just to tie it all together. And that's your gnocchi. And then you put a pan of water on, and you just blanch them really good. You drop them in. Once the water is brought to a boil, you lift them out. And then you just put a hot pan on with olive oil or clarified butter. And then you just sear the gnocchi. And then you add in a little bit of butter in the end, salt, pepper, done.
Oh. Do you know what? I think that description there is going to be our most re-listened to section of the entire podcast we've ever done. I think a lot of people are going to re-listen to that.
They'll be pausing it and doing that bit.
Rewinding it again. I want to listen to that again. So to drink. Now, there's already been a few drinks.
Yes.
We've got, there's some drinks rolling around.
Yeah, there's two drinks that we're bringing in, and it is, would be, there is a honey wine from Ethiopia called Tej, which is basically looks like orange juice, but it's a honey wine. Mm-hmm. And has that super bright yellow. And it's, if you're not Ethiopian, it's weird, right? Because it has that fermentation, smells different, and then, but it's super delicious to drink. And because it's so hot in Ethiopia, you're going to get hammered.
Right.
Because like, you don't think, like, this is, oh, it's just sipping the wine. And yeah. I drank, one of the first things, I was lucky enough to travel with Anthony Bourdain to Ethiopia.
Oh, wow.
One of the first things I did, we went to this all honey wine bar. And this is, it's like a poor man's drink, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, imagine you're in a marketplace. And Tony is just so amazing. Like, he loved, he doesn't want to stay at the hotel. He doesn't want to be at any fancy stuff. So one of my happiest memories with Tony is sitting in a honey wine bar with all these traders and workers and, you know, like just really rough place, right? And he's just sipping down honey wine and, you know, we're getting hammered and we're just having a good time, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
For you as well with meals, so like, because this is probably the first meal we've had, I might be wrong, but where there's a point where it's like, and now we get hammered.
Yes.
Yeah. No one else has said that so far, I don't think. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, this is the thing. That's what I'm saying. Like, for you, does the meals get, do they taste differently? Is it the experience? Like, what is it about drunk dining that is more appealing?
Well, I think dining a little bit version of intoxication, just you're outside, you're in Ethiopia, and there will be dance, and there will be Ethiopian dance. Mm. And if you're not coming from Ethiopia, if you're from Ethiopia, it's natural. There's never a meal without dancing. Mm. But since I will bring a lot of, like you lot, your dad is now there, right?
Yeah.
You will need to be hammered to hang with Ethiopia, because it's all shoulder dancing, right?
Old school your stuff. Dad will get stuck into that, though.
Yeah, he will do it immediately.
He'll have to shake his shoulders to get all the stuff off his back.
It'll be great. It'll be great.
Chicken bones for him.
Exactly. So it's a lot of that, and I just think I actually just learned on the way over here. I just learned a new English word. What was the word you talking about? Pucker. I never heard that word.
Jamie Oliver says
pucker.
It a lot.
Yeah,
that was, but that's what we talked about. And it's like pucker. It's like, whoa. That's so I'm trying to throw that word in, but I don't know how to
say it. Really, the only Jamie Oliver uses it, and the rest of us.
I think it's like an old, like it is like an old Cockney term, right? Yeah. But then he used that.
So how would you say?
Really.
So I feel pucker today, or is this
I
dish
think
pucker?
More like Jamie Oliver would use it like he'd eat something he's cooked, and he'd be like, oh yeah, that's pucker.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
you
delicious.
Maybe what if someone said, "How are you?" You wouldn't necessarily go, "I'm
pucker."
Pucker.
Although I am an immigrant,
I am an
immigrant. I can actually do this because since you guys throwing us all out now anyway,
sure,
I can say pucker. So I can say pucker, right?
Not if you're trying to stay. That would be the worst.
Oh my god!
If they're coming around going, "Are you English?" You go, "I'm pucker."
Yeah,
that'd be it.
I'm feeling pucker. That's it.
Would you guys say this is a pucker show today, or
yeah, you could.
the show was pucker. Yeah. I think Jamie Oliver would say the show was pucker. I think he would say someone's hair looks pucker, maybe. Okay.
He says it a lot.
He does say it a lot.
I didn't know the term. I was like, this is brilliant when you can learn something.
Yeah,
you
know, I don't even know if Jamie Oliver still says it. Does he still say pucker, Jamie Oliver? Well, or was it in the Naked Chef days?
I just picked this word up today. Thank you very much. I'm going to continue.
You've got to take the torch.
With a Swedopian accent, I'm saying pucker. And I'm throwing it in wherever I want.
Yeah, it's like if I come to America and just start getting on the saying hella and stuff.
These tablecloths, by the way, I know it's a podcast. People aren't going to see it.
Sure.
But they're pucker. The pucker.
There are some pucker tablecloths that the great Benito's laid out for you. It's had a pucker job.
So we've got some pucker Ethiopian.
Also, I realised that I told a lie there when I said that you're the only one who's like had Let's Get Drunk at the Meal. The only other person is Tom Kerridge.
Who's the other chef.
So maybe it's a chef thing. Because he was also telling a lot of stories about chefs going out for meals, getting hammered every time and having meals together. And maybe it comes back to what you were saying earlier about restoring the community. It's like a sense of everyone together. It's like being drunk brings everyone together a bit more.
Yeah, you want it. Also, chef, like, you want it to be a little bit of a shit show, right?
Yeah.
Because it's good. It's delicious. Like, you imagine you go to a good concert. Mm-hmm. It's always a fight somewhere, right? Otherwise, it's not really a concert. Like, I'm not talking about Carnegie Hall. I'm talking, like, Pitt. Like, this is, people are going to have a great time. So you want a little bit of that. You want kind of your crazy uncle in the corner. I grew up with a drunk uncle, an amazing man.
Yeah.
But he wasn't my drunk uncle, right? And he was always in fights.
Yeah.
And my dad and my parents were always like, don't go with him. So, of course, you go with him. You realize, like, my uncle Tushton was brilliant because he realized he was the only adult I knew that never was allowed a car, right? But when you're 11, you're like, oh, I bike, so I like my uncle better, right? And it's like at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, he always had a nap, right? And that's when he gave us fish to sell, and that's how you picked up your little pocket money. Mm-hmm. And he was always in semi-fights with people, always arguing about money or liquor or something like that. But once he came back from his nap, he forgot everything what he was arguing about. He went to the same people and we were biking, and I met the whole fishing village through him, right? And my mom was always like, is he with Torsten? And she was always so worried. But it was the best time because, you know, he's like the talk of the town. He was, he's just like, so you need that when you have a dinner party. Torsten is definitely there. probably arguing with Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
And Torsten's probably like saying like, you know what, screw Robert Nero. I'm an actor too or something like that. Because he was in America. You know, when you're a kid, you don't know if your uncle's a lion or not, right? Like, for me, it was a big deal. Like, my uncle had been to America. I didn't know if he'd been there on vacation or he actually lived there. Like, the story never finished because he was drunk all the time. But he's like, I know someone that was a big deal. Like, someone has been to the state.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, at 11, at least, I probably spoke more English than him.
Yeah.
But you never check your uncle. Who does that? No. So you need a little shit show.
A little bit of that, someone stirring it up.
Yeah. So we're getting a bit drunk. We've got the honey wine.
Yeah.
Did you say there was going to be another drink as well?
Yeah, it's this. So we now have Swedish aquavit, we have bourbon, and then, of course, we need just a really nice beer. Beer in Ethiopia is called Tella. And it's also, I love these type of alcohols where you have no idea. Like when you're in the West, like, 5.4% alcohol. Mm-hmm. Like in Ethiopia, there's not going to be anyone measuring how much alcohol it is. And I love that, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, because people also don't always, in the countryside, they don't go into the cars. They still have maybe a pony carriage or, you know, it doesn't mean anything. Like you can drink as much as you want.
Mm.
So I would have Ethiopian Tella, like Ethiopian beer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like a... It has sort of the feeling of a pale ale in a way, but it's more sour.
Okay.
Right? Nice. It's homemade. It's homemade. And very often you have to skim off the first layer. Right there, some funk, right? It's like a little bit like shoes and mushrooms.
Yeah.
But once you're
we can scrape that off the top and flick it onto James's dad's lap.
Oh, bullseye? Oh, fucking hell, look at that.
And he would say, like, pucker beer.
Yeah.
Pucker.
So, here we are. We're shit-faced.
Yes.
What's next, James?
The dessert's coming out.
The dessert. you know.
Which is my favourite course, by the way.
It all is.
The time. Ed's a starter boy.
I like starters.
I'm a dessert.
Yeah, pork belly. Like, you have no skin and bone. Like, where do you put all this?
I'm not sure. I think my actual skin and bones are made of pudding.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is.
Oh, that's brilliant. I would go in Sweden, going back to the Midsummer movie. You know, Sweden, we have a dessert called princess cake.
Right.
So this asks all kinds of questions. Was it the princess who made it? Why is it called? So there's this marzipan cake, green marzipan, food coloring, like, you know, whipped cream. So it's layers. So you have sponge cake, then raspberry, strawberry jam, and then you have a little bit of cream, and then you do this dome. And it's, when you're a kid, it's delicious, right? Yeah. Like, it's so many layers and all
so
this
stuff.
And
so colourful as well.
And colourful. Right? Yeah. And it's, why is it green and all that shit? So I would do, like, princess cake for everyone. I think that would be a lot of fun. And, of course, it has to end up with a food fight in the end. Imagine Arsene Wenger throwing princess cake at your dad. It's a shit
My
job.
Dad's, like, by that point, the only one who doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, he's covered.
He's completely covered anyway. The food fight starts. He's just absolutely getting in there, getting revenge.
Yeah, amazing.
That would be a good restaurant.
I mean, who makes the best princess cake? Who, in your lifetime, who's giving you the best? Is it first one you had?
Yeah, my grandmother. My grandmother, Helga, because she was a really good cook. But it's the way she took time to show me how to do it, right? Mm. And I wouldn't be a chef. I wouldn't be here talking to you guys. Having this incredible tablecloth here, if it wouldn't be for my grandmother Helga, I wouldn't, honestly. Yeah. She was the one that, this is like different, but when I started to travel very young for cooking, so went to Japan and then to Switzerland and then to France and all that stuff. And I remember back then, like, on Sundays, I called my grandmother and she first looked like, Mark is calling long distance, hang up. I'm like, no, I it's okay. Like, I'm putting my coins in. And I had to explain the food that we did, like, imagine, like, it's like minute by minute, like, here are the carrots, and the fish look like this. And that was how we connected. We really, like, talked about, oh, what do you mean they have, like, tuna? Is that same as mackerel? And it was purple. And, like, I had to describe everything that we did. And it's a raw. Like, how can that be raw? Like, it was like, and that was one of my favorite conversations ever, actually.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, you had, like, at that point, maybe it was Swiss francs or 20 Swiss francs, whatever. And then it was just erupted. Yeah. And at the same time, you have your grandfather in the back, hang up the phone! There's no money! And then it's back and forth between the two of them.
Yeah.
And, anyway.
Oh, that's beautiful, man.
Yeah.
So let's read your order back to you, see if you're happy with it, see how you feel about it. So water, you would like some still water to begin with. You would like some injera bread from Ethiopia with some variety of dips. Starter, you'd like ceviche, and you got vodka in the ceviche, and what else were you having in that?
We had bourbon at the same time.
We got bourbon already to drink.
Yeah. Main, you would like
what bourbon, by the way? I just want to nail that down.
I think we would actually go a little bit, like, it would be a bourbon from Kentucky, and then I would actually put peanuts, caramelized peanuts in it.
Oh,
that's a really cool, like.
I'm glad I asked that question. Yeah. That sounds absolutely amazing.
Yeah. In the bourbon, delicious. Your main course, you have Roddy Scott, Man in the Barbecue, and then you've got Marco Pierre White cutting up some Ethiopian raw beef for people.
Yes, screaming at people, of course.
Absolutely screaming at people, smoking away.
Yeah.
Side dish, you've got some gnocchi roasted with garlic, almonds and kale. Your drinks, you have Ethiopian honey wine and some teller from Ethiopian beer. And dessert, you have princess cake made by your grandmother.
Yeah.
Feel good about that?
That's a party.
That, I think, out of all the menus we've had, that meal is a full journey as well.
It is. Yep.
You took us through that. I feel the whole way there.
Yeah, I think everyone was sitting in the desert during that. Yeah. Very nice.
That was incredible. Thank you so much, Marcus.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun. See you guys in Shoreditch.
Yeah, absolutely.
See you in Shoreditch.
Sure.
Absolutely.
For a pucker time.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Pucker.
Learn a word. That's awesome.
Marcus Samuelson.
Scrumdiddlyumptious.
Oh, okay. You didn't tell me you were going to say scrumdiddlyumptious there.
That's how I felt.
That's how you felt?
Yeah.
It was a great meal, featuring things that I didn't even know were things.
Things I didn't know were things, people I didn't know were people.
It's the best sort of episode.
So many people, this big party in the desert.
I never would have thought on this podcast we'd have raw beef.
Raw beef.
A chunk of raw beef.
And like on the opposite end of the spectrum, some beef has been, or some pork has been cooked for ages.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. It's really fascinating, delicious sounding menu. Thank you very much, Marcus.
And not a chia seed in sight. Oh,
thank the Lord for that, because I was enjoying his company so much. But yes, if he'd said a chia seed, he would have been out that window.
I would have
mate.
Felt so bad.
So sorry, Marcus.
I'm really glad that no chia seeds popped up there.
If you like the cut of Marcus's jib, his restaurant Red Rooster is open in Shoreditch. And if you like the sound of that, you can go on to redroosterldn.com. Check it out. You can follow Marcus on Twitter at Marcus Cooks.
Ed, can people follow you on Twitter?
Oh, they can. At Gamble Comedy, mate. What about you?
At James Acaster.
Yeah, so there you go. You've got a full... To fully follow this episode on Twitter, you can now.
Yeah.
Also, if you live in London and you feel like coming to see me do my final performance ever of my Blizzard show, I am doing the Shepherd's Bush Empire on December the 20th.
Very nice, Ed.
The perfect way to kick off your Christmas holidays.
I should Coco.
What's that mean?
I don't know. I should say so. Is that what? Yeah.
Oh, well, I should Coco very much.
Yes.
So pop along to the Shebu Emps to come and see me December 20th. Go onto my website, edgamble.co.uk, for information on tickets.
My book's just come out, Perfect Sound Whatever. It's about how 2016 is the greatest year for music of all time.
And may I say, I've read it and I loved it. I'm thinking about me in the future now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Because James won't send me a preview copy.
Yep.
If you like this podcast and you haven't subscribed, what the hell are you playing at? Subscribe on wherever you get your pod shops from.
The pod shop. Go down in the pod shop.
Sling it a review. Give it 5 stars. Lovely stuff. Thank you so much for listening again. Say goodbye, James.
Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Hello, it's Rob Orton here. Now, I've got a podcast called the Rob Orton Daily Podcast. It's a short poem or story or a musing on a particular subject every single day. What if you commissioned Picasso to paint your house and he just painted it white? Would you be annoyed? Wouldn't it be good if you could pour Miracle-Gro onto other things, such as pizzas? Have you ever thought about what a beach might be like if it was made from digestive biscuits? Have you ever tried to cry about something you're not thinking about? If you would like to listen to a daily podcast that includes subjects I've mentioned there, then please listen to the Rob Orton Daily Podcast.